I'm Scott.
I'm Bill.
And we're the Trade Guys.
You're listening to The Trade Guys, a podcast produced by CSIS where we talk about trade in terms that everyone can understand. I'm H. Andrew Schwartz, and I'm here with Scott Miller and Bill Reinsch, the CSIS Trade Guys.
I'm Jack Caprell, filling in for Andrew Schwartz. In this episode, the Trade Guys react to a proposal from the EU for a policy reset with the Biden administration. Plus, we'll explain why a literal food fight broke out in Taiwan's parliament last week and what it means for U.S.-Taiwan trade negotiations. And Bill and Scott will explain what they'd do on trade policy if they were president for a day. Stay tuned for all that and more on this episode of The Trade Guys. So we're with The Trade Guys after a little Thanksgiving break. Hopefully everybody's out of their turkey coma or whatever it is you decide to feast on for Thanksgiving.
Leftovers are definitely the best part.
Speaking of leftovers, this is my attempt at a pretty bad transition here, I think. What's left over for the US and EU for Biden to grapple onto? That's a question I think that's on the minds of folks, I would imagine, in the Biden transition, but definitely in the halls of Brussels. The Financial Times reported just a couple of days ago that the EU will call on the US to seize a, quote, once-in-a-generation opportunity to forge a new global alliance, bury the tensions of the Trump era, and meet the, quote, strategic challenge posed by China. And so they have a draft plan was leaked to revitalize the transatlantic partnership. It would include cooperation on things from digital regulation, so data and antitrust and how to regulate online platforms, to responding and recovering from the pandemic, to climate change. It seems to me like the EU is seeking a broad reset on its own terms. But I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think it's a realistic opportunity that the Biden administration would seize? Or do you think there's not enough goodwill? The two sides are too far apart, even if there is goodwill.
Well, you know, when I read about these things, I have this sense that I've been dropped into an episode of Can This Marriage Be Saved? It's clear that the US and the EU have common interests in a lot of global economic issues. It's clear we ought to be working together. The real question is, can we get past the irritants that seem to distract us at every turn in order to work on the things where there is common interest and potential value in a common set of solutions? So it's very European in its pronouncement. You know, only they can write press releases like this one. And I do think there's room for it. I just don't know if we can get past chlorinated chicken and all the rest of the things we constantly trip over to be able to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the need is there. There's no question about that. And it's good that they've recognized the need. And I think they've also recognized the opportunity. The change of administrations means fresh thinking here, we hope, and certainly opens the door to a better relationship, because the last 4 years haven't been very good. It's been a much more confrontational relationship. But I think if you look at what they proposed, it is not all that new. And the European approach tends to be, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to work together if you'll do things our way. You know, and if you agree to GDPR, the privacy regulation, if you agree to our regulatory approaches, if you don't send us your chickens, then we'll get along very well. And that's not really what negotiation is about. And it's not really what cooperation is about. And if you listen to other statements they've made over the last 9-10 months, you know, I just don't think they're there. I don't think they're there yet. Sabine Vand, who is their top trade career person, the director general for trade, has said, I think on more than one occasion, that it's premature to go back to TTIP, that they're not ready for a full-on agreement. You saw that the European Parliament the other day approved the lobster deal, which was we had previously made jokes about back in September, and said this might be an opportunity to go a little bit beyond that. But it's a little bit, you know, that where we're kind of left hanging. And I have to say, I think this is European politicians reading their public very well. I don't see amongst the members of the European public much of a taste for a closer trade relationship with the United States. Repeatedly, their view has been, and there's a lot of activists in this, but their view has been that doing business with the United States would end up being a giant regulatory downgrade, that our standards are inferior to theirs. Our food, health, and safety and environmental standards are inferior to theirs. And a trade agreement would, in fact, inevitably mean they would have to come down to our standards. I think they're wrong on all those counts. I don't think our standards are inferior to theirs. I think probably some are, but some of theirs are weaker than ours in a number of areas. And I don't think that it's inevitable that that's the way a trade agreement ends up anyway, with the least common denominator. But that's what they think. And there aren't a lot of politicians there that are prepared to challenge European public opinion. I mean, what this whole deal has going for it is, can we work together on China? And there, I think they are very slowly coming around. But just yesterday, I saw a quote from an unnamed German diplomat, and it would be German because they're the slowest on this, saying, well, we need to proceed very carefully because we have a significant economic relationship with China and we don't want to jeopardize that. And I have no doubt that's true. We have a significant economic relationship with China, too. It's a complicated decision for countries to make as to how much pushback they want to give. And I think until we and the EU are closer together on how hard to push, it's going to be difficult, you know, to make much progress on anything meaningful in the trade area.
Yeah, Scott, let me ask, does the EU's emphasis on China as a driver of the alliance, one, represents an evolution in Brussels thinking, but also if it would make it a little bit of an easier political sell for Biden and for European politicians?
Well, it has the benefit of being true. We do stand to gain from cooperating with Europe with regard to trade with China. And as Bill is quite correct by saying, we both have large commercial relationships with China. There's opportunity for working together. And clearly, this is timed for a new audience in the United States, put it that way, for a chance to sort of put away older tensions and use the change in administration to start afresh. So that's all true. I just don't see it as either a focus of the Biden administration early on or something where Europe is going to suddenly be able to get over a lot of the things they've never been able to get over.
It's partly the tip-off is, I think, this growing conversation in Europe about strategic autonomy and technology autonomy, which are now popular phrases in Brussels and elsewhere. And I was talking to a group of Austrians earlier about that and sort of made the point that in the United States, those terms are being interpreted as an attack on large American tech companies. And that this is, you know, the digital services tax, which we've talked about before, the Digital Services Act that the EU is contemplating, the various prosecutions they've got going against the GAFA companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. You know, these are companies that have come under criticism in the United States, too, for various reasons. But at the end of the day, they're our companies. And I think Americans are comfortable if we criticize them. They're less comfortable when foreigners criticize them. And it looks more and more from an American perspective like what the Europeans are doing is saying what strategic autonomy means in Europe is autonomy from the Americans. And what it ought to mean, I think, is autonomy from the Chinese. But they're not talking about Alibaba. They're not talking about Weibo. They're not talking about Ant Financial. They're talking about Google and Apple and Facebook. I think there needs to be some further evolution there, and they need to make up their mind, you know, who the enemy is. I don't think it's us, but that's where a lot of them seem to be right now. And frankly, after 4 years of Trump beating them over the head and threatening auto tariffs, I can see why they think that. But that's why the new administration provides a chance for a reset.
It's an old habit for Europeans to think of Americans as the enemy in commercial disputes, and for U.S. Interests to think of the Europeans as, you know, their most prominent headache. So we both have to get over that impulse to make progress in an area like China. We should do it. I don't have high hopes for it.
So another, I guess you would call them an ally that might be difficult to make progress with regardless of the administration, particularly when it comes to forming an alliance against China. If you go across the Formosa Strait, you have Taiwan. And there was kind of a crazy, at least crazy from my perspective, story out of the Taiwanese parliament last week where lawmakers threw pig intestines and punches at each other. So a brawl broke out in the parliament over a proposal to ease restrictions on pork imports from the United States. The video that I watched of this is pretty wild. And, you know, the controversy stems from Taiwanese president her decision to allow imports of U.S. pork, which contains ractopamine, which is a growth hormone or an animal feed additive that was banned in Taiwan and also banned in China and the European Union. This is like a big political issue for the Taiwanese people, it seems. My question is, you know, this is all the decision to allow imports of U.S. pork containing this additive seen by many as Taiwan trying to set the stage for full negotiations with the U.S. for a comprehensive FTA. And the question that I have is, if this is the type of resistance that Taiwan's president gets for trying to lay the foundations for a negotiation, are there any hopes for a full-fledged agreement?
Well, look, a couple items of context. First, let's not forget that the Greeks figured this out and realized that what politics is about, the reason we created politics is so we can settle disputes without killing each other, basically, all right? And politics is like that, all right? And so, you know, you could go back and recent trade disputes in the United States, and it gets pretty intense. In fact, intensity is what often wins political debates. You can go back to, 1856 or so, when Congressman Preston Brooks of South Carolina strolled across under the Capitol Dome and beat with a cane Senator Charles Sumner of Massachusetts, and then was admonished, resigned his seat, but was reelected by his constituents. The congressman was reelected, as was Senator Sumter. So we've come to blows in our own Congress. This does happen on occasion. And politics is kind of like that. It tends to get like that in ag for a couple of reasons. One is food safety is really important. It's a really important issue to consumers everywhere, to citizens everywhere. And it's a complicated issue. Ractopamine, as you mentioned, it's a pharmaceutical, basically, that makes the hogs develop generally leaner meat before slaughter. So it's popular in the U.S. because lean pork is popular, but it has a higher limit in the U.S. than it does elsewhere. And in some places, indeed, the addition of ractopamine or use of it is banned. So it's been one of those debates where it's stuck. But this is not unusual in the ag business. Because of how complicated it is and how important it is, that ag protection often comes with a selling idea. You know, that foreign stuff will kill you. To take beef hormones or Europe's response to genetically modified foods of any sort. So this is a popular theme. Ractopamine was in many ways the key to a negotiation that was stuck. The U.S. and Taiwan have had a trade and investment framework agreement, which is an agreement to talk, I think, since the Clinton administration. And we've never gotten anywhere because of stumbling blocks like ractopamine. And when the president decided that it was okay to move on the issue, it was a breakthrough in these talks that have been stuck for so long. So if you want the breakthrough, you've got to take the political pain. But there's always political pain. In this case, it was pretty intense.
Bill, what do you think? Is this theatrics or a death sentence for a FTA negotiation?
Well, in an odd way, I kind of took heart from it, and in the sense of, you know, you think things in our Congress are bad. Look at Taiwan. You know, we're not throwing pig guts at each other. I mean, there's still time. But in a way, it was sort of heartening. But it's not good news for the trade relationship. I mean, as Scott said, this is an issue that gets people excited, partly because everybody eats. You know, this is not an issue for a small group of the population. Everybody eats. And I think in Taiwan, they eat a lot of pork. So this is an issue of some relevance. It's a little frustrating because we don't have lots of people in the United States, anybody in the United States, as far as I know, dying from ractopamine ingestion. But there seems to be fear about this. And I think it indicates that producing a closer trade relationship is going to be more difficult than people think. And I think members of the U.S. Congress should look at the incident closely, not for inspiration as to how they should treat the other party, but as to how deeply felt the issue is amongst Taiwan consumers. And they should know that if we go down the road of a trade negotiation, you're going to see more of this. That said, I just throw in an interesting factoid, and that is the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, which I think many of our listeners know I served on for 15 years. They issued their annual report yesterday. And this is a group that I think people who follow China know has been generally somewhere between highly critical and skeptical of China's policies and China's intentions. And it's got a number of commissioners on it that are very strongly pro-Taiwan for a variety of reasons. And they had a chapter on Taiwan, as they always do in their report. People were waiting to see what they were going to say about the trade relationship. And there was some surprise in the media that they did not recommend a free trade agreement with Taiwan. There was a Q&A after the presentation, and a reporter asked them why they didn't recommend that. And typical of the commission, which I was proud when I was there, there was an honest answer to it. And the answer was, our commissioners are divided on that question. I thought that was interesting because this is a group that would be one of the first that you would expect to be banging that particular drum, and they're not. And the implication for me is that there may be less support for doing that out there here in this country than people think. And the people that want to rush in to do it, you know, as some evidence of basically sticking it to the mainland and having a closer relationship with Taiwan at the same time, may need to think this through a little more carefully.
So that gets me to a good segue to the next thing that I wanted to discuss, which is, you know, what you guys
better segue than the last one about
leftovers. Yeah. Well, an attempt was made. I wanted to ask you guys what you think Biden is likely to do in his first 100 days on trade. So, I mean, he gave this interview to, I think it was Tom Friedman in the New York Times, where he said, you know, he's not going to prejudge what he does with the China tariffs, but he's definitely going to try and get all of our allies on the same page when it comes to confronting China. You know, we've talked about the Europe relationship. It seems like that will be difficult to move forward. It seems like there's a little bit of skepticism about Biden maybe moving ahead with a FTA with Taiwan to kind of make a statement in the first 100 days. So what's left for him? Is he just going to try and clean up the mess that Trump left him? Or is he going to try and really break new ground?
Well, it's a slow-moving train, I think. You notice he gave an interview that was in the New York Times this morning in which he said he was not going to remove the tariffs immediately on China, that because he was going to conduct a policy review, which is actually the normal thing that most incoming presidents say, which is we're going to review everything that my predecessor did and we'll make decisions about it as we go along. That suggests, you know, a deliberative approach, which is probably good. We haven't had that for a while. And it also suggests that nothing is going to happen right away, which is sort of what he's been telegraphing, you know, about trade, that he's got to spend a lot of time cleaning up the mess that our economy is and dealing with COVID. And frankly, I don't think that the Biden people fully appreciate the number of trade issues that are going to be sitting on their table on day one. I think they're getting the taste of it because I think every foreign leader who has called him to congratulate him, as near as I can tell, has brought up trade because it's always on their minds. And I can tell you every meeting he's going to have with foreign leaders, it's going to be on the agenda, whether it's the Canadians, where you can be sure about that. You know, you can't have a conversation with the Prime Minister of Canada without talking about lumber or dairy. You know, there's other things to talk about, but they're always on the agenda. So I don't think he can avoid it, but I think it's going to be cautious, deliberate, and he's going to do what he said he's going to do, which is try to build a coalition on China. And I have to say, I think the new development there is that's going to be easier than I would have said a year ago. And it's going to be easier because of Chinese actions in the human rights area. You know, what they're doing to the Uyghurs, what they're doing in Hong Kong is very hard for other countries to swallow, particularly in Europe, which has a very strong human rights record. What they're doing to the Australians, you know, this is basically Chinese economic coercion, throwing their weight around and discriminating against, imprisoning, oppressing their own people. That makes it easier and easier for Western rule of law countries to say, this is unacceptable and we need to work together. So it's an uphill climb regardless for Biden. But I think the Chinese have made it easier, ironically.
I want to get to Australia and China in a second. But Scott, let me make you president of the United States for the day. Your first trade action in the Oval Office would be, and it can't be to rejoin TPP. What would it be?
Well, look, let me just make two observations and how, if I were President Biden, I'd think about it. First is, just because the occupant of the Oval Office changes doesn't mean the problems change. So you wind up with the same set of issues, same set of problems that your predecessor faced. And that's worth thinking about. And it is worth at least managing expectations about. The solutions don't become easier just because the people change. But the second thing I'd note, and I think Bill has made this point in writing in the past, is that as a former senator, I think President Biden will appreciate the fact that the Senate often solves problems by process, not just by substance. The Senate operates on principles of cooperation, or what they call comity. And there are several things that a President Biden's administration could do on trade, which would be simple, in some cases, just gestures that would smooth things out, that would provide a springboard for later. For instance, bring to consensus the selection of the next director general. All right. Work on a couple of fairly straightforward issues where the U.S. has been an obstacle, and find a way to just smooth it over. Okay. You don't really have to change the substance. It's essentially a process intervention, but what it does is creates the basis for goodwill in the future. That's a lot about how Senator Biden worked for 36 years. And I think those habits will be useful to him and most beneficial in the first 100 days than later on. So that's what I think he'd do. He's still got the same set of problems, but a little process might smooth things and provide for better results later on.
Bill, if you were president for a day, what would you do on trade? Can't be to rejoin TPP.
I think if I only had a day, I'd try to do some quick things that would send the right message and the right signal. I mean, I think Scott is right about the right approach, but I wouldn't tackle the tariffs. I think that's a more complicated problem that takes work, and there's a lot of politics in those, and it would take some time. The quickest thing you could do, I think, is say that you're not going to block the WTO DG selection anymore, and you're going to go along with Ngozi as the choice. And that sends a good signal. It sends a signal that the United States is ready to play, and it sends a signal to play constructively and resume its role of leadership in the organization, and that the United States is also ready to go along with the consensus when there is one, rather than try to block it. So that's a little thing that would, I think, have big implications. I would also talk to my incoming USTR, whoever that is, and say, one, on the WTO, go solve these problems. You know, the United States should not be the obstacle. The United States should be the leader in trying to get over these humps and get something done. Not to say the problems are stupid. They're important problems, but we should be part of the solution and not contributing to the problem. I think I would also say in the short run, I would tell the UK that we want to complete the agreement if we can, and try to cement that relationship with the ally. That may be harder than people think. I mean, my sense of the current state of the thing is, despite all the happy talk every time they have a round, they have yet to approach all the difficult issues. And they continue to kick the can on when they're going to finish. You know, at first it was before the election, then it was before the end of the year, then it was before Trump leaves office. And now they're saying, well, it'll carry over. You know, the real deadline's April 1, because then they can't use the fast track process if they're not done by then. So I think I'd tell my USTR, let's see if we can get this one done. Because frankly, if we can't get it done by April 1st, you know, then I, the president, have to worry about TPA and renewing TPA. And that's one more legislative battle that we may not want to fight right away.
That's very astute and rational of both of you. I think if I were president for a day and could act on trade, I would solve the Boeing Airbus dispute. So we could remove the tariffs on French wine and enjoy some of their delicious offerings.
See, I don't mind leaving them twisting in the wind a while longer. They deserve it.
Yes.
On this particular issue. They were bad, they got caught, and they ought to be more contrite than they are.
But is it worth sacrificing our cheap access to delicious French wine?
There's wonderful California wines out there, or Australian wines.
Yes.
And if you don't drink too much, I mean, all you're giving up are what, olives and feta? Life will go on.
You're giving up single malt scotch, but you know, we'll get
there. Yeah, I'm not a scotch drinker, so I don't care about that.
I think with midweek thoughts of French wine, we'll leave this one. I know we wanted to get to China and Australia. I don't think that dispute's going anywhere, so we'll save it maybe for our year in review. But leave you all with thoughts of delicious midweek French wine.
And a US-UK free trade agreement, which I think would be a capital idea for the first 100 days.
All to go with our turkey leftovers.
Delicious.
Thanks.
Thank you.
To our listeners, If you have a question for the Trade Guys, write us at tradeguys@csis.org. That's tradeguys@csis.org. We'll read some of your emails and have the Trade Guys react to it. You've been listening to The Trade Guys, a CSIS podcast.